This is Colorful.
As Afro-Caribbeans, we're proud of our sense of community. Oh yeah, we're very big on that. We try to help each other in any way we can. Except when it comes to saving each other's lives. Even if all we have to do is put our names on a bone marrow register. Not quite so big on that, are we?
There are 24 times more white people than black on the UK bone marrow register. If you're black or mixed race, join the register today. Visit ACLT.org and see how you could be the one to save a life. ACLT, unite to fight leukemia.
As Afro-Caribbeans, we're proud of our sense of community.
Oh, really? How proud are we? That's the voice of the actor Gary Beadle. You're going to hear a couple of other voices in just a moment. One of them belonging to Oren Lewis, the chief exec of the ACLT, and the other to a man I mentioned a short time ago, Cyril Onyedjekwe, who is a 54-year-old father of six and grandfather of six. He has myelofibrosis. Let's introduce both of you. Welcome, gentlemen. Welcome to you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, that's quite a hard-hitting advertisement we just heard there. But for once, you're not in the studio to talk to us about the latest drive. There's something more pressing because there won't be any more drives if there's no more ACLT. And that's where we are finding ourselves in the position today.
That's correct. Yeah. The ACLT itself needs a lifeline, relatively speaking, in terms of a serious cash injection in a very short space of time to allow the ACLT to exist beyond the end of March.
Wow. And the figure, I believe, is £80,000.
Yeah, we need a minimum of £80,000 to cover our core costs of staff and office space to allow us just to stabilize and to give us the time and space to go forward and find more funds and do like what, well, I was doing up to 4:30 this morning working on a grant application, which has got a 12 o'clock deadline today.
Wow.
So as soon as I leave here, I go back to the office, finish that in an hour, and then out the door before midday because that's the deadline. And that's what we're doing. We're just firefighting, looking for money to keep us going and putting ourselves on the line publicly to the community and say, please help.
It seems amazing, Oren, and I've met you many, many times. I've seen you in television and radio studios and at some of the nicest and swankiest hotels, you know, glad-handing with the celebrities, the politicians, people who are very, very wealthy indeed, that you, that Beverly, your wife, that the organisation that you've nurtured from this little acorn into what I thought was a mighty oak could be in this position. And we'll want to find out in more detail how you got to that particular stage. But first of all, let's try and talk about what it's really about, which is saving lives. And I'm very, very pleased that you brought Cyril into the studio. Cyril, it's very nice to meet you. I'm just wondering what this organisation means to you and what life is like for you at the moment.
Thank you very much for having us in this studio. For myself, obviously on a personal level, the ACLT is really my last chance because I've been on the bone marrow register now for the last 5 years. And there's no match for me in the British register, no match on the international register. So I rely on the ACLT to recruit new donors now. That's the only way to save my life because if we don't do it, then that's it. So with the threat over the ACLT, we've got no choice but to save the ACLT because it's the same as fighting for my life.
Let me ask you something really directly. Now, the ACLT has been going since 1996. I remember a whole group of us from a programme called Black Britain became aware of the charity when one of our colleagues knew Beverly. Okay, I mean, we think she was working at the BBC at the time.
Right, that's good
and enough, so when we heard about the story, we thought, we've got to do this. It's a really good story with which to start the series, and we did, right? And we filmed a whole heap of people lining up outside the Hackney Empire one night. It might have been June or something, 1996, and we broadcast. People, whoa, fantastic response. But there are lots and lots of people who, although they said they supported it, were kind of unmoved. They didn't join the register. They didn't get involved. And one of them, one of the celebrities who actually hosted a table, and he was very upfront about this, Eddie Nesta, he himself ended up needing help from you guys. You know,
that's right. We were, when Eddie was diagnosed with cancer, myself and Beverly ended up talking to him in very much under the radar. That's what we do a lot,
yeah.
You know, in terms of speaking to him personally and to give support, comfort, counseling, guidance.
Yeah.
If you know, call us. You know, anytime you need Eddie, and that's what we do. We do that, a lot of that.
Yeah.
Go to people's houses and talk and explain to family and friends exactly what that individual is going through. Mm-hmm. Understanding the jargon and terminology, the medical terminology. Go into the hospitals. Going to see the physicians that are talking to the families, so that we can use our experience of what we went through with Daniel to make it easier, culturally easier, for those family and individuals to understand what's being explained to them. Because when you're in the field of cancer and especially bone marrow transplantation, it's a whole foreign world when you're diagnosed or if you need a donor.
This is the point I'm driving at, because there are some who even get so close to you, they host a table or come to the Gift of Life, but they don't go that step further and actually put themselves on the register. And I'm just wondering whether in your case, Cyril, you had thought about this, heard about the ACLT, got involved, put yourself on the register before you yourself found that you had this particular type of leukemia in 2005.
Well, to be honest, that's in my case, it's one of those things most black people don't really think about. And I'll put my hand up because I wasn't on the register. Although I carried a donor card, I've always carried a donor card from the age of 18 when I first got my first driving license. I've always been somebody that's interested in carrying donor card, but I've never heard about the bone marrow register.
You've never heard about it?
Never heard of it until I really needed bone marrow transplant myself. I know about organ donors, but I didn't know about bone marrow register.
I'm just wondering about that, because I find it difficult, and I'm not making a personal judgment on you, that people who, you know, read all the media that's out there, you know, online, newspapers, whatever, aren't aware of this. But yet, that is the case still, isn't it? It's amazing.
It's still the case. We, myself and Beverly had a meeting a week ago in Croydon, in the heart of Croydon. And I can see around the table, and this is like 7-8 o'clock in the evening, and these individuals, you can tell a lot of them, they'd missed us. They're from my generation.
Yeah.
Not everyone, you know, is totally familiar, but as you rightly say, see, and you can tell from what's happening out there in terms of people talking about the ACLT, there is a strong familiarity. Mm-hmm. But like every cause, not everyone is, you know, is watching TV or reading the papers and listening to certain stations, and so they get on with their life, and it passes them by until, you know, it touches them directly or indirectly.
This is the thing, and I want to ask you, Cyril, just how this illness came into your life. When did you first realize something was wrong? What did you feel?
It was really in October 2005. I was just messing around, because I love classic cars, and I happened to be working on my car, and I had this pain on my left side of my chest, and I thought, oh, must be indigestion. So I didn't think anything of it. About 2 weeks later, the pain is still there, and it hasn't gone away. So I thought, this is getting serious, so I better go to the doctor. So I went to the doctor, and he sent me to the hospital for a check. And from there, they called me back in and said, we've got to do a biopsy. Because we're suspecting something more serious. Because they didn't tell me what it was. So on Christmas Eve, I went into hospital to have the biopsy done. Had the biopsy, and just after Christmas, I had a phone call saying I need to come in as a matter of urgency. And I went in and sat me down and told me that I've got myelofibrosis, and that the only cure for it is to have a bone marrow transplant.
What went through your mind?
Had you even heard of it? Because I've never heard of it.
I've never heard of it up to that date, because I had to go home and look it up in the dictionary. Lucky enough, when I went in, because when they call you and as a matter of urgency, I took my wife in with me, because everything they said to me just went over my head. I thought I was dreaming, you know. So when I got home, I really sat down and went on the internet and looked up the word myelofibrosis and really started researching. And to be honest, I'm lucky to be sitting here today, because if you read everything or believe everything you read on the internet, I thought 2 years down the road, I shouldn't really be there. But kind of puts a different perspective in your life.
And how is the illness affecting you on a daily basis? Because you're sitting there, you look well to me, but obviously there's things going on that we can't see.
Unfortunately, all the damage is being done on the inside, because in my case, what it is, for those that are not sure what the bone marrow does or looks like, is if you could imagine a sponge with tiny little holes in it, that's what the bone marrow looks like. These are usually in the main organs and the main bone structures of in your body. And that's where your primary blood cells are really produced. And from there, it then goes into white blood cells and red cells and the rest, and platelets. In my case, those bone marrows, or the sponges structure, they're slowly closing up. Because as those blood holes close up, then that means the less my body can produce blood. And obviously, once that dries up, then no new blood and no new me. Full stop. That's pretty mildly, really.
Mm. I mean, I've had a scare in the past, and I have to admit, I was absolutely terrified, you know, when I went into the hospital and they sat me down and did some checks. And on the day when they said there was nothing wrong and I just needed some antibiotics, oh, I thought to myself, my God, I was so delighted and so relieved. I can't imagine what you must be thinking, what you must have been thinking then, and how you must be thinking today.
Well, really, I take every day as it comes, because the thing is, I've reached the stage where I've accepted my condition. There's not a lot more I can do about it. Everything is out of my hands. And to be honest, I rely on people like the ACLT, the Oren and Beverly, and the rest of the team. Really, my life is in their hands. I'm not blaming them or kind of holding them responsible for my life, but my life is in parallel with the ACLT now, because having gone through the British Bone Marrow Register and the International Register, really, I rely on new donors to come forward in order to save my life. It's funny, because I work for a large organization, and I was diagnosed, like I said, back in 2005. In March 2006, a colleague that is white was also diagnosed with needing a bone marrow transplant. Mm-hmm. He was found a match within 3 months of going on the register.
Within 3 months.
Within 3 months. And he had more than one match found for him, whereas 5 years down the road and still waiting. So that kind of puts it in perspective.
Oren's thrown up his hands.
Hence, as we always say, you know, when you do the comparison, at best, it could be a 1 in 4, 1 in 5 chance for a white person.
Yeah.
For someone like Cyril, someone from an African descent, you're looking at a Wembley-sized crowd of over 1 in 100,000 before you can even remotely find a donor. Hence why the need for us to keep doing these drives, promoting regular blood donation, because Cyril needs blood.
Yeah,
Cyril, you know, Cyril, Daniel, people like who need blood on a regular occasion. We need people, especially people of color, to step forward and give blood. But the main call is to step forward as as a bone marrow donor. And these days, technology's moved on so quick. It's just
what are you holding up in your hand?
It's a saliva sample. It's just a small saliva sample. And we're again trying to get people to give a saliva sample to be tested, to be put onto one of the registers, the anti-nolan register, or if they're a blood donor, give, and I'm holding up a spoonful of blood when they go and give blood as a regular donor, to join the National Blood Service's bone marrow register. It doesn't matter which way you join, as long as you join, so that when they test on behalf of Cyril and others like him, or Nevaeh Green in Croydon and all the others out there, they can say, someone's just joined. Someone's doing a Doreen Carney.
Yes.
Someone's just joined.
Let's talk about Doreen Carney.
And can save someone's life immediately.
Can I get an amen for Doreen Carney?
Amen.
The woman from Detroit, Michigan, from the Motor City Cobra, Thomas the Hitman Hearns. Remember him from, yep. I know you love your boxing.
Exactly.
And she is the woman who, back in 1999, helped give Daniel, your son, and Beverly's son, the gift of life. I mean, what about that woman?
Incredible lady. She's in touch with me on a regular basis. And I know she's watching our website and looking at it in horror, thinking, oh my gosh, this cannot happen. Because she's out there promoting this cause in America. And she actually wrote to me just before Christmas saying, have you got any more information on videos I can use for my presentation on behalf of the ACLT? She is symbolic of what can be achieved if you just step up to the plate when you hear the call as a donor. Because she was she was the winning lottery ticket.
Yes.
Fantastic lady. An angel. And she gave our Daniel many, many more years, you know, nearly 10 more years to get on and produce some fantastic things in life in terms of passing many exams at school and college and university, inspiring those in ill health to fight the fight because they saw him as a beacon of light to say that young man can do it. So I'm going to keep pushing on. And Daniel inspired thousands of others, as you know, to step forward as potential donors.
Right, it's important to say that he did beat the cancer. It was something else that took him.
He beat cancer. Daniel beat leukemia. But tragically, we lost him on the 8th of October, 2008. Not to cancer, but he had multiple organ failure. So he needed a third form of donation. He had blood on a regular basis. He had a bone marrow transplant, but in the end, he needed an organ donor, and hence why all our family and friends now carry organ donor cards, because we stepped up to the plate there and then, but
yeah,
we ran out of time.
Got this email from Nathan in Nottingham. Good morning, Nathan. This man is an activist. He's inspirational in the East Midlands there. He says, morning, I donate blood, and I'm on the bone marrow, he's a transplant on the register, but I've tried to recruit black friends of mine and they're scared and believe it's bad for them. So I've educated them and I hope now they will think differently. I tend to be the only black person in there when I donate.
I think it's time for me to step forward and put my hands up. I'm trying to hide from Orin. I'm trying to keep out of his eyeline.
Look at her long and hard. Look at her.
I'm trying to hunch my shoulders over and look a bit invisible.
Cyril, look at her.
But seeing as Bonsu blew up people like me who aren't on the register, I feel that I have to come forward and put my hands up and say I'm not. And what's worse is, Cyril, I'm sitting next to you. I'm listening to Orin say things that I've heard him say many, many times. I'm not scared. I wasn't scared when it was supposed to be needles. I'm certainly not scared to give saliva. Mm. There's absolutely nothing stopping me up until this point, except convenience. I've gone to do it a million times. I've seen when the latest drive is and I've gone, okay, well, I'm definitely going to do it on that day. I'll go over to Hackney. I'll go over to Harsden Library. And then something comes up and I think, oh, I'll wait till the next time it's a bit nearer or it's on a day where I'm doing absolutely nothing. I've got no real reason why I'm not on that register. But I'm going to make a promise on air today to Orin and use you as my inspiration. I know Daniel was an inspiration for a lot of people. I'm going to use you, Cyril, and I'm going to promise you that the next available time I can do it, I will do it. And, you know, all I can do is put that out there because I know there's a lot of people like me. I know there's a lot of people that have no real reason why they're not.
It's I suppose, fence-sitting from our community. What you're saying is there is...
Did any part of that make you angry, Orin, when Juju was mentioning, when she was holding up her hands? Did that make you angry? You know how you like her, but did that make you angry?
It's frustrating because I've heard it...
a billion times.
Yeah, really, I have. Yeah. And it is frustrating because for us, it's... When I see what Cyril went through this morning, okay, he was waiting for me at the station and he was... And you don't mind me saying it, he was saying to me, I need to get into the warmth because I have a nose... he has a nosebleed, which is affected by the weather, the conditions, and that's how it is for him. And it's a case of Cyril mustn't be running around trying to stop himself from having a nosebleed or whatever symptom because he's, you know, there's another day goes by because there's not a donor there, because someone's saying, oh, I'll wait till it comes around to me. Oh, it's not close enough to me. It's on the other side of London. I'll wait... No, because one in three of us will be diagnosed with cancer. One in three. Mm. If you have a blood cancer that's not treatable by chemotherapy or radiotherapy and you need a bone marrow donor, brothers and sisters are only one in four chance of matching, 25% matching. Dominique never matched Daniel. So then you need someone on standby. And because bone marrow donation is linked to race, the patient and the donor being from the same race, if not enough black... people, mixed race people, Asian people, don't step forward, then we are going to have some tragic situations happening and we have to look at ourselves in the mirror and ask the question, did we do enough?
I mean, the list of people, some of whom are very well known indeed, who've passed away over the last 15 years since you've been doing this, you, Beverly, and the team have been doing this. Well, there are quite a number of names. You know, we can remember Brian Daly and DJ Swing. Yeah, that's right. Yep. Let's have Lyndon David Hall. There are quite a lot of people, not all of them famous, but a number of them well known, who would stand as beacons, you would think.
Well, we're coming up to the anniversary, first anniversary of losing Imogen Appiah.
Yeah.
23rd of January.
Little girl.
Little girl, Croydon girl. And she fought right to the end and kept, you know, you saw her at Gift of Life, and she wowed everybody, didn't she?
She wowed everyone,
yeah, and said, it doesn't hurt, you know, please step forward. If you don't help me, you can help someone else.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, this is a little girl, and here we have Cyril, and it could be someone else's father, someone else's brother, mother, auntie, grandparent. Our people have got to step up. And what we're saying to people is, if you don't support, if you don't financially support the ACLT to get its own lifeline to survive beyond the 31st of March, then there will be no service there to educate our community and show them where to go, what to do it, how to register. And people like Cyril and others out there right across this country and in Accra, Ghana, where we were a few years ago, and in Kingston, Jamaica, and New York, there'll be people there who rely on us who'll be saying, our community has taken a massive step back and gone 15, 20 years backwards. And everyone else will be looking and saying, what a shame. You didn't help yourselves.
Just remind us, Oren, I remember when you were talking about the little girl Imogen before. Am I right in saying that you actually did a drive at her school?
Correct.
And even when it was actually at the school where Imogen attended, there was just a lack of people who turned up.
Apathy ruled that day. It was horrible. Mm. Really was. We set it up with the school and the parents, and the parents were coming in to take their kids home and literally stepping over us, stepping by us to get out of the way. And we're saying, and the kids are saying, no, I want to help Imogen. She's my friend.
Yeah.
And the parents just did not want to know. It was for Sheila, Imogen's mom, it really hurt. And we carried on doing the drives, but yes, you're right. That particular one was disappointed.
Didn't some people from other communities, Asian and white, say, can I help?
Exactly.
You want to come forward?
Exactly. And we have an open door policy at our drives because, you know, it doesn't matter if you're black, white, Asian, mixed race. You come on board, you help one of your own. But we're just targeting the hardest to reach.
Yeah.
And that's what hurts, because other communities realize it's the right thing to do. When I go and give blood, I'm usually the odd one out. But yet I see old age pensioners coming in and saying, which arm do you want, right or left?
Yeah.
I'm here to do this. This is my duty.
But what do you think that's about then, Oren? Because I've put my hands up and said, really it's just come down to forget why. It just hasn't happened. And that's for me to think about. But when I cannot understand it being up, there's no way that a drive would be happening in front of my face and I would walk past. Knowing what we know now, knowing it's not painful, knowing that you only need to go and give your saliva. So what were people saying to you that day? You must have stopped someone and said, can you just give us 2 minutes? What were they saying? I don't have time.
I don't have the time. I've got to, I've got to go home and cook. I've got to do this, do that. Something else mattered, even though it was on their doorstep.
Do you think there is still fear? Do people not believe that it's as simple as it is?
Yes, there's that. I mean, I go around, when I leave, I go back to the office and do this grant, and then I go to Sutton High School at 12:30 to do a presentation to the sixth form, and I've been doing that all around London, to get the sixth form to understand, you're going into the big wide world, I'm going to arm you with the facts, to go against the myths and fears and taboos, especially if you are from the BME community, because the myths and fears and taboos are causing lives to be lost from our community. And I see all the time the sudden mind shift change in our youngsters, because our youngsters are the hope.
Yeah.
And, I did one yesterday in New Cross, and you can tell that these young girls are going to go back and have a big debate with their parents and brothers and sisters to say, I heard the truth. Don't come now with these myths that you've been talking about, whether they be cultural, religious myths, or it hurts, but yet they're still, when you say to them, oh, who's got a tattoo? Who's got a piercing? And the hands go up.
Yeah.
And you say to them, well, hold on a second, wasn't that a needle? And they say, yeah, does it look good, bloke? Yeah. And I say, yeah, it looks good, but did it hurt? A bit. Well, we're talking a pinprick to save a life as a blood donor, or just to give a saliva sample.
We've got Oren Lewis in the studio and Cyril Onyejekwe. Oren is the chief executive of the African Caribbean Leukemia Trust, founded in 1996 when there were just 550 black and mixed race donors or people on the bone marrow register in the whole of the southeast of England. Now we've got 35,000. Cyril is 54. I mention his age because he would like to be 80. He would like to live to as long as 80, maybe even 90. But at the moment, he's on borrowed time. Why? Well, because he hasn't found a match. A white colleague of his from work, who was diagnosed at the same time as him, managed to get a match within 3 months. In fact, he found two matches. Cyril, 5 years on, has not found a match. Why haven't you joined? If you haven't joined the Bone Marrow Register. And perhaps you might say to yourself, well, this charity has got so much profile. There are many other charities for me to help, for me to give my £100 or £50 to. Fair enough. But Oren is saying there are many people out there who could just give a little and help us. And we'll be talking about the campaign to raise that £80,000 in just a few minutes.
We were just talking really about the fact that as much as technology is moving on in terms of it's making it easier for people to register by giving a small saliva sample, what we found since this was launched in the summer last year in our community is that the barriers and the shutters have gone down even harder in terms of trying to get them to register in bigger numbers in comparison to the white community. Yeah. The white community have come forward in record numbers through the Anthony Nolan Trust, through the postal route or going to the drives and giving a saliva sample because it's easier. So you would think that, okay, as Juju and said, and there's lots of people out there who have fear of needles and so on. Okay, if you don't want to have a needle via the blood service route, take the easier route, saliva.
Yeah.
But what's happened is people are now saying, our people are saying, oh, what are they going to do with my saliva? What are they going to do with my DNA? Are they going to profile me for criminal purposes? Is it part of this Islamophobia in the Muslim community? And so both these communities are regressing and stepping backwards, and it's making it harder for us to do our work. We still do it. We still get good numbers, but it's harder when it should be easier. And, you know, when you've got Cyril, they're organizing drives and we're going around going some huge places in London where it's predominantly black people, and where you should be getting thousands, you're getting a handful of people coming through. You start to wonder what is happening in our community. One excuse was, oh, I hate needles. Okay, we'll give you another option, an easier option. Oh, I don't trust what's going to happen. Are they going to tamper with my DNA? Are they going to clone me, experiment on me?
Clone me.
Oh, yes. Clone me. We've heard that. Clone me, experiment on me, tamper with my DNA. I don't trust the system.
Okay, the DNA thing. Let's start talk about the DNA thing, because when you said that, I did say straight away, well, can it be done? Because, of course, we know that DNA can be taken from saliva, but you're saying this is a completely different record.
No, the police are not allowed to take this.
They're not allowed to touch. Mm-hmm. This is going to the Anthony Nolan Register who do the testing. And this form of testing, saliva testing, is done all around the world. In America, the American Registry, the German Registry, all the registries around the world have been doing it for years. And you see in America, you see African Americans queuing up. They are queuing up to give a saliva sample because they know the system works. Mm. But over here, it's different. And it's really hard in comparison to the experience myself and Beverly found in December 2005 when we went to Accra, Ghana for a week and did a lot of work there on behalf of someone, Danny White, who needed a bone marrow transplant. Mm. And we saw nearly 1,000 Ghanaians queuing up to give a blood sample to help. In fact, to the point that two young men were literally fighting to be the first one to have a blood sample taken. Beverly is trained to take blood, and she was there, and you got these guys saying, I want to be number one, and we've got a picture of it. That shows you over there and in Nigeria and places there, people want to help, but over here, we seem to change.
They don't have the same mental baggage.
Exactly.
Maybe that's what it is, isn't it? Mm. Cyril, I mean, I'm look at the population of Nigeria, 150 million. Imagine if you did a drive in Lagos or Abuja. I mean, when you talk to your colleagues at work and when you explain to them what you're trying to do, what kind of feedback do you get? What do they say?
Well, like I was saying to you, the problem I've had is that people are quite happy to donate on my behalf. But unfortunately, the system doesn't work like that. Mm. Apart from the only people that could be tested directly on your behalf is your siblings. And apart from that, everybody else that wants to register to join the bone marrow register have to sign up to go on that international register because it can be too specific.
Literally, but I just want to make it clear what you're saying there, because what you said is people have said to you on these drives, well, I'll do it for you, so I'll donate if I'm a match for you, but I'm not going to just put it out there for anybody.
They want me to guarantee that it will only be tested against myself, and I couldn't give them that guarantee because it doesn't work like that. Not only for the on cost level, but to be honest, what I say to them in return is, if you join the bone marrow today, bone marrow register today, tomorrow you could be saving a member of your family or even your own children, because you never know. Once people join the bone marrow register, you stay on the system till the age of 60. So it's a long time to be on that register and a long time for you to be able to make a change and save lives. And as far as I'm concerned, people should join. Forget the baggage about it's against my religion, because no religion preaches, every religion I know preaches to help your fellow man, save your fellow man. None of them turn around and say to you, you mustn't help your fellow man. And as far as I'm concerned, people should be open-minded. I mean, the ACLT or the Anthony Nolan and all those international registers do not share information with the police or any other organization. They're only solely there to save life, nothing else.
Something that Cyril said, I'm holding up a very faded yellow donor card. Mm-hmm. That's my Anthony Nolan donor card. I've had it since the 21st of March, 1996. And that's all I've got to show for it, because... Yeah. All we want people to do is have it and be on standby and hopefully get the call. That's what's about. It's like an insurance policy. You take our insurance policy, you hope you don't have to use it.
Yeah.
You know? Uh-huh. But it's there as a safeguard. And this is what we're trying to do, get an insurance policy that we can, one of us can be the policy that helps Cyril and the Very Green and Croydon and all those individuals, because we need that lottery winner out there. But the lottery winner to give the gift of life. And that's what it's about. But we won't be able to do that unless people invest their funds, you know, £3, £5, £10, whatever, towards the ACLT, and use the technology like we do all the time with our mobile phones and our tech services. Use the technology and the internet to help us in real time, because if we disappear after the end of March, there'll be no service there culturally based for Cyril and others like him to help them.
I'm just looking at your Virgin Money Giving page, Save the ACLT Charity Appeal, the running total, and then the extra amount with a gift aid, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. But Cyril, one of your children, one of your daughters has called up. I'm not sure which one, because I know you have a few. So let's see who is there. Good morning to you, Cyril's family member. What's your name?
Hi. My name's Claire. It's my stepdad that is trying to raise money for the ACLT to stop it from closing. And I'd just like to say to everybody out there that I'm not Afro-Caribbean myself, but and I've also got underlying health issues. But by making a financial donation to the ACLT, which I have done, you can help keep the ACLT from going under. So it doesn't matter whether you're white, black, whatever, you know, just give a donation and help us out, because any donation that helps out the ACLT will help my dad fight for his, you know, to get a bone marrow, because without them, then, you know, there's not much hope of anything, you know.
Just got to tell our listeners that Cyril's getting extremely emotional at the sound of your voice in the studio. It's really quite moving. I wanted to know whether you had heard of the ACLT before your stepdad got involved.
Not before that my stepdad unfortunately became ill. You know, I hadn't heard of them. So we just need to get the word out there and just let anybody with any ideas of anything that they can post through to raise money. I mean, we're doing all we can to help out, and I'm sure there's lots of other people that can too.
Definitely. Thank you very much for calling up. It was great to hear from you.
Okay.
Cheers.
Cheers, Claire. Thank you.
Claire, can I just say thank you very much for your support? I could, you know, it took me by surprise. You know,
we're all here. Don't worry. We're going to do our best, okay?
Thank you. To know that you're all behind me, thank you very much.
Oh, okay.
Thank you very much indeed, Claire. Bye-bye. Got this email from Suzette, who says, through my work, I make a regular donation to the Anthony Nolan Trust. Does any of this go to the ACLT, she's asking? That's from Suzette.
In a direct answer, no.
People assume, maybe.
People assume. They are a charity. They do fantastic work in the wider community to, to help people of all races. But the reason why the ACLT exists is because the Anthony Nolan Trust and the other version, which belongs to the British Bone Marrow Registry, which comes under the NBS, both do fantastic work, but weren't able to engage the black and mixed race community before the ACLT came along. And so we filled that void, and we assist both organizations by putting the raw resource, our people, onto their registers so that they can then do the other bit and actually do the testing, because they've got the facilities, do the testing to see whether a donor can be found. So we go in, we do the hard work of the at the front line and do all the raising awareness, register people, counsel people, work with the families in need. And we're there from the beginning to the middle and the end with the family and those who we know, like the actor David Harewood, who, you know, we were at the beginning and the end of his journey when he miraculously became a bone marrow donor for an African-American gentleman.
I remember his story very well. He told us it when he came in here about a year or so ago. I mean, he's a guy who had been to the Gift of Life but hadn't signed up, hadn't joined the register, was walking through Notting Hill Carnival, I think, with his girlfriend. And she said, this is your community. Come on, sign up. And he did.
He came over and Beverly took his blood sample and we've got a picture of it. It's probably on our website. And we put it through the system. Anthony Nolan Trust did all the testing and found he matched with someone in America. And then he took the route of donating, which is the easier route, which is through your stem cells, through your blood. It's a very simple, painless process. There's no drilling or whatever that people seem to think it is. And I was with him on a Friday morning, just in central London, where he went into the hospital room, and I sat with him for 4 hours that morning, and we just chatted whilst he was hooked up to a machine that took a small blood sample out of his right arm into a filter machine right next to him. The filter machine worked like a dialysis machine, and it kept his stem cells as a fluid, small bag of pink fluid, but returned the blood sample back to a vein in his left arm.
Yeah,
that was it. And when he finished and they told him how much they collected, he was in tears.
Yes.
He was emotional because he said, this is the biggest thing I could ever do.
There's nothing more you can do.
Nothing more you can do.
You know somebody called Darren, don't you, Cyril? Yeah. Darren is on the line. Darren is another one of your children, your stepchildren. Darren, good morning to you.
Good morning. Hi, Dad. Hi, Owen.
Morning, son.
Morning.
What do you want to say, Darren?
Unfortunately, I haven't been out of the things. I'm at work, but I was aware that my dad would be on here this morning. And
talk to us, Darren.
Sorry. Let me start again. As you can tell,
it's an emotional time for you, isn't it?
It's for the whole family. So.
Yeah.
And you're strong.
Darren, you don't have to say anything.
No, I've been.
It's okay.
No, I'm not normally like this.
It's okay.
Okay, son, I know I got your support.
Darren, thank you very much indeed. Thanks for calling. And we feel. And I'm glad you called, okay?
Sorry, I've got it together. What I want to say here is, you know, not just my dad, many other people need the black community to come forward and, you know, be donors. And obviously at the moment, what for the ACLT to continue the amazing work that they do for our community, we now need funds. Now, I have registered on the bone marrow register, and you know, as yet I'm not a match for obviously my dad or anyone else, but hopefully in the future maybe I can help someone. But what I have done is I've made a, you know, financial donation for the ACLT appeal. Many of my friends who aren't even from the black community, you know, they recognize the work that ACLT are doing and want to do. And they've made donations. So we really, you know, I just want to appeal to everyone out there to please make a donation.
This is Colourful.